The baby boomer generation, or those born after World War II, are becoming the largest group in the United States. By 2030, all baby boomers will be older than age 65, and about one in every five will be of retirement age. As medical cannabis and even recreational cannabis is legalized across the country, more and more baby boomers are turning to cannabis for their age-related concerns. The Green Revolution has been hijacked by older Americans. However, there are many concerns associated with this phenomenon. We're not educating, nor are we assessing the concerns associated with older adult use of cannabis. And we sure aren't promoting the benefits of older age use. Well, that changes here, because on today's episode of Cannabis Nurse Truths, we're not afraid to talk to you about how cannabis use in older adults has many beneficial effects.
Welcome to episode number 15. Cannabis Nurse Truths continues with the great Dr. Denise Foster. I'm Lee Foster. Don't forget new episodes every Wednesday wherever you get your podcasts and get your social media fix. Find us on X at Canna Podcast, CannaPotCast. And we look forward to hearing from you. We'll keep you in touch with what we're up to. Just search for us. Episode number 15, The Green Revolution Has Been Hijacked by Older Americans. Okay, boomer.
Who thought that the older generations would be more openly willing to use cannabis? But as we think about what cannabis does for people, it sort of begins to make sense.
It makes complete sense. Yeah, it does.
Older generation of Americans are finding that cannabis is very helpful. And this is a concern because obviously older adults are also associated with the risks related to cannabis use. And we have a disconnect here. The thing that irks me the most in cannabis land, now I'm talking marijuana land across the country where it's been legalized, is we call these medical marijuana dispensaries. I challenge you to do a survey and distinguish or determine how many medical people actually work in a medical marijuana dispensary. It's, to me, smoke and mirrors. We're calling it a medicine, but we're not treating it like a medicine. Even the federal government is calling it a medicine, especially with their patent that associated it with antioxidative effects and neuroprotective effects. As cannabis legalization is occurring across the United States, we're seeing that people born between 1946 and 1964 overall have held a more favorable attitude toward legalizing cannabis. This is the generation after World War II, and of course, into the 1960s, the hippie generation. The favorable attitudes are changing mainly because these are the individuals who are using cannabis the most.
So right here, right now, in 2024, we're talking about people in their 60s and most of their 70s.
And down to the 50s.
Late 50s.
This is the generation that is doing their research. They're doing their homework. And it's also significant because this is also the generation, like my generation, that was told during the Nixon era, the Reagan era, just say no. This is your brain on drugs.
Right.
We had stiff penalties, and there were a lot of social injustices related to cannabis use because of the federal prohibition. For instance, no federal money for you, no federal housing for you, no military service or federal service for you if you were caught using weed or caught having weed on you. Now, I'm not talking about the drug dealers who are dealing unsafe drugs or the cartels who are obviously dealing unsafe drugs. These are individuals who are going to prison just for having a dime bag in their pocket. It all begins to make sense because these are the individuals who are now looking at it going, see, we told you it was harmless to a point. It was beneficial to a point. And the research is now bearing that out, that individuals who are the older generation are coming to this knowledge by doing their homework, not where they should, I should say that, but they are at least asking the right questions, and they're the ones that are benefiting the most from it.
So part of it has been their willingness to learn, and then the other part of it has just been a lot of the research that has been done over the last, decade or so that has made all these revelations about how useful and how effective it can be. And, well, people are now finally taking notice.
And because we can now include these questions about use on national surveys related to health and well-being and substance abuse, we can begin capturing the trends related to this growth. And that's why we're projecting that in the by the next couple years, by 2030, not only will the number of those older populations are projected to double, but they're also going to be the majority users of cannabis. Hello.
What other trends are we seeing?
So almost a quarter of the population in 2000 had at least tried it once in their lifetime. In 2011, lifetime usage rates for all of the adults went from 23% in 2000 to 44%. That's a big jump.
Yeah.
And those that were older than 65 jumped from 3% to 17%. That's a triple, more than tripling the amount of those that over 65 using cannabis in just 11 years.
Wow.
It gets even better than that. Now, fast forward from 2011 to 2013, we saw that the rate of cannabis use among persons aged 50 or older increased 71%. 71% increase by 2013. And then in 2018, 5 years after that, we saw a significant increase, a 75% increase in those individuals 65 years or older. They are finding that these compounds are very popular with the older crowd. Trends are showing now that it is the older women who are now actually more interested in using cannabis for treatments of their age-related conditions. Also, individuals that have a college education, who have a middle to higher middle-class income, and married individuals seem to be the populations that are using the most of the cannabis in these states.
Why do you think women are more open to it?
Women have been shown to actually be more open to alternative therapies in older age. This always makes me laugh because I think, I'm not laughing in a mean way, but it brings to mind a billboard that I once saw that said, "Men die of stubbornness." I think it was a billboard meant to be funny because underneath it said, no, we don't.
Yeah, that's very true.
So women have been shown through the literature to actually be more open to new modalities, and women are more accepting of things that may be a little bit on the outskirts of what men might accept. Also, men are notorious for obviously not going to the doctor.
Very true. We're notorious for shrugging off our health in general and just saying, it's fine.
That's right. But you've always used cannabis. So there is that. But now it's the women, these are the women who have been the caregivers. Maybe they're still the caregivers. Maybe they're they're caring for grandchildren, or they're still helping to care for adult children. Women are just more open to seeing what cannabis can do for them because they're hearing about it in their social circles. A lot of our customers, our clients that come to my shop, are actually word of mouth because they heard about it at their bunco game, or they had a physician referral because they were complaining about age-related arthritis. These are the ways that the communication in this population is being disseminated. And older women are seeming to be more likely to try cannabis for these conditions.
So what would be some of the reasons that older adults are turning to cannabis?
It could help them with their anxiety, their depression, their sleep, they're coping with loss. Many of them are actually turning to cannabis instead of over-the-counter drugs, sleep aids. They're also turning to it instead of alcohol. Older adults, we're back to the understanding that older adults have time to read. And they have time to do some research, and they become their own investigator and doctor, right? Dr. Google. And Dr. Google says this about cannabis, and maybe I should give it a try. When we look at the older adult population, we also know that they are also more likely to have drug-drug interactions because of the numerous drugs like anti-anxieties and sleep aids that they're on. So we also want to make sure that they are counseled and educated about potential drug-drug interactions when they use cannabis.
And many of them have also probably been taking prescription medications their entire life, and they're kind of sick of it.
They are. One of the main reasons that they would use cannabis is to reduce we call this phenomenon a polypharmacy phenomenon. The polypharmacy is a phenomenon that I experienced in my own clinical practice as a community nurse, when every one of my patients was on at least a standard six drugs, and I could name them. It was the antihypertensives, the anti-cholesterol, the anti-anxiety, the antidepressant, maybe the sedative or the hypnotic to help them with sleep, a sleep aid. Then they were on a more than likely a diabetes medicine of some degree. They were on several different types of blood pressure medications. This is a polypharmacy situation. And then you add on other diseases, hypothyroidism, gout, heart failure, all of the other conditions that are chronic and continue throughout life. The polypharmacy issues become very concerning because we have the potential to interact not only with those drugs that are already being taken, but now we have the potential to interact with cannabis as well. This is why we need education, people, education. Another concern from the education stems from the administration route. Older adults are confused. We grew up knowing that the only way to use cannabis was to smoke it. Smoking it, man. Well, now we have oils and edibles. We have inhalers. We have suppositories. We have many different ways to use it. And all of them have their differences related to onset of action. Smoking cannabis provides you effects within 2 minutes, as rapidly as that, versus if you eat a gummy, we don't know when that might hit because there are so many variables that affect the digestion. We have metabolism. You have, what did you eat? Was it a salad? Did you even eat? Or did you eat a nice cheesy piece of pizza? So when you are looking at the unpredictability and the lack of education and counseling regarding the administration routes, older adults get very confused about what goes where and how quickly they may interact to provide an effect. We're mostly concerned with the compound THC because that is the one that is going to drive the mental impairment, the mental changes that can create confusion in the elderly. We're back to the polypharmacy. If they're on pain medications, which every one of my patients in the community was on a pain medication, that would possibly be potentiated. There would be an additive effect if you added THC to that. Now we're talking safety concerns because we don't want her falling down. We know what happens to little old ladies who break their hip, and we don't want your grandma, your mom to fall down. We don't want anybody to have any safety issues related to altered mentation.
What are the biggest safety concerns that you have?
The biggest concerns are related to using the THC compound. We know that older adults have a slower metabolism. They have lowered immune function. They have eyesight changes. They have chronic conditions and changes to the brain and the central nervous system. For instance, Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease, seizures. These are all conditions that can create more danger in relation to high doses of THC because you're now changing the way that the mind thinks, the mind behaves. And if they can't think, they can't balance. Now there's more of a risk that they're going to have a safety concern. So it all really stems around the THC compound. THC, when given for medicinal purposes, and when I'm talking about medicinal purposes, I'm actually referring to microdoses. Microdoses of THC were the standard in prior cultivation of cannabis plants. It was only after Prohibition that the cultivation of high concentrations of THC genetically altered the plant concentrations of THC. Prior to, I would say, the 1980s, we saw cannabis maybe anywhere between 3 to 12% THC. Now it can be as high as 50% in the illicit market, and that is an inappropriately high level of THC. And unless our adult population is educated on how to avoid the dangers related to high doses of THC, this is the compound that will create the confusion, and it will create an additional problem if you're taking anything that alters the mental state.
What other mistakes do you find people making simply because they just don't have the education or the knowledge to understand how to use it correctly and safely?
They'll use it inappropriately, related mainly to the administration route. Most of your older adults don't smoke or vape anymore. we're back to the eye related changes. It's difficult for them to maybe light up and see where the joint is burning, or it's difficult for them to see how much oil to take. It's difficult for them to maneuver what the what we call paraphernalia in the legal terms, but these were the accessories associated with either cannabis smoking or vaping.
Sure.
They have a difficult time with that. Maybe they have glaucoma. Many of the cannabis users who are older are using it for glaucoma, because actually the use for glaucoma has been endorsed by the American College of Physicians. It's one of the few reasons that the American College of Physicians has actually said, yes, we know that cannabis can affect the eye pressures associated with glaucoma. It's historical, because back in the 1970s, Robert Randall was the first medical marijuana patient in the United States to take his use of medical marijuana all the way to the Supreme Court for his glaucoma. And his attorneys argued before the Supreme Court that if he did not use medical marijuana, he would lose his eyesight because of his glaucoma condition, which would therefore deprive him of his right to pursue happiness. And he won on this argument. I have some of Mr. Randall's historic cannabis cases. It's fascinating because they're labeled as coming from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. This is the predecessor to the Department of Health and Human Services. And this was marijuana grown at the University of Mississippi for the National Institute on Drug Abuse. And it is labeled as being less than 2% THC per cigarette. So less than 2% of THC, which is considered a microdose in a joint. Joints are typically averaging around 50 milligrams per joint. So 2% of this THC was just enough to keep Mr. Randall's glaucoma at bay. How about that? There's one of the most significant pieces that is not being disseminated to our population, that if you have glaucoma, THC in these microdoses can be very effective to help prevent you from going blind. One of the concerns related to using cannabis for our older adult populations is where they live. And are they on the road driving? This is a social situation. We know that as the adult ages, there may be a need to have either assisted living facility or a skilled nursing facility or some type of institution where older adults are now living either independently or to a degree, maybe not independently. So the question is, where do we go with this particular situation where more older adults are using cannabis, but yet they may be restricted from cannabis use in their skilled nursing facility, their assisted living facility, or maybe even an independent living facility where the policies do not allow for cannabis use on the campus? This is a lifestyle situation, and we know that one of the many reasons that older adults will use cannabis is to improve their quality of life. A group of physicians back in 2018 recognized that this was a concern. A group of physicians back in 2018 recognized that cannabis use in these facilities that are typically governed by some form of reimbursement from the federal government, think either the Veterans Administration, Medicaid, or Medicare, they may have a part in funding some of these adult living facilities. A study that was put out by Dr. Pallas and a colleague in 2018 asked that question: how can older adults use medical marijuana in a skilled nursing facility? Note that in 2018, the only thing that was available, however, was medical marijuana. The Farm Bill, the Agriculture Act of 2018, was incepted in December of that year, and that legalized hemp. And hemp is where I traffic now. I traffic in the cannabinoids that may or may not include THC. And the question that Dr. Pallas could be reframed in today's world is that how can older adults use medical marijuana or hemp-derived cannabinoids from skilled nursing facilities? The hemp-derived cannabinoid category is easy because hemp-derived cannabinoids are legal across the United States. And I have had many older adults who do have these living housing situations come to me and ask, can I use this? Can I use this with my mother? Can I use this with my grandfather in the living facility? And the answer is, with a hemp-derived product, yes, because these are 100% legal. The issue becomes where the independence ends. The issue becomes who is actually going to be administering that medication, because in that instance, we're looking at it as from a medical perspective. Back to the study on Pallas. Pallas recognized that many of the conditions that were very effectively treated using cannabis are prevalent in older adults. And many of these older adults may be living in a skilled nursing facility or an assisted living facility that is going to be funded in part to a degree by a regulatory agency under the federal regulations. This means that if a licensed caregiver or an employee of that particular facility were to administer marijuana, now we're talking the high THC plant, if they were to administer marijuana, then they would likely be in violation of their regulatory duties by following the Controlled Substance Act that says cannabis is a prohibited Schedule I drug. There has not been a study nor a challenge yet to whether or not this applies to the hemp-derived compounds. I did a literature search, and there is nothing about medical marijuana as opposed to hemp-derived cannabinoids in relation to the federal laws. What I usually educate and counsel our customers, our clients about, is that you need to have a discussion first with your facility and describe the facility policy if there is one. This does two things. This either first alerts the facility that they don't have a policy, and it makes them go, I think maybe we better start talking about this. Or if they do already have a policy in place, this might be a way to educate them on how to provide either medical marijuana safely or even hemp-derived cannabinoids safely in their facility, in their residence situation. Dr. Pallas reminded us of a very important law that was incepted in 1989 called the Patient Self-Determination Act. This was actually the act that gave us the inception of our advanced directives, where your advanced directive is asked, you don't have to have one, but in every healthcare facility that is federally funded, advanced directives are something that are, the information is provided to you, that you are the driver of your advanced directives, and if you're not capable of doing that, we assign that to somebody else, relative, right? But you fill out the form, and these advanced directives are actually part of the individual's right to use cannabis, even where it is contraindicated in a facility. So these are some of the additional tensions that exist in the schizophrenic United States of cannabis. Unintended consequences is that we have prohibited our healthcare facilities, including our skilled and assisted living facilities, from understanding how cannabis works as a medicine and preventing the residents there from using it.
You could pretty much also call us the schizophrenic United States of unintended consequences.
Yes, everything that we put a law in, you know, like Snake Plissken said, land of the free, right? Everything is a regulation, and everything has a consequence of that regulation. And we're now seeing that while the older adult population is the most significant, the most prevalent population and growing that is using cannabis, we're also at odds with the facility policies that are under the direction of the federal regulations regarding controlled substances.
You know, one interesting aspect of this, now that older people are using it more, older people are the ones that tend to vote more.
That's right. Remember, it's the college educated, middle age and older adult that are actually reading the research and have time to listen to their neighbors' discussion about how cannabis helped them.
Yeah.
Word of mouth is now overtaking any of the advertising markets, because in most markets, it's still illegal to advertise your cannabis due to FCC laws. You can't,
yeah.
You can talk about it, but you can't market your gummies on air. You can't market them on TV. Pharmaceuticals can, but cannabis can't. Back to Dr. Pallas. So these doctors recognized that they had a duty to their patient population. And so these two medical directors, Dr. Pallas and his colleague, they developed a protocol in which residents could purchase their own cannabis products. Either the resident themselves or their caregivers could purchase, now we're talking marijuana, we're not talking hemp-derived products again. They could purchase their own cannabis products. And the facility went as far as to providing a lockbox that the individuals could keep in their rooms for their cannabis storage.
A weed safe.
A weed safe, right? Because it's so dangerous, we don't want anybody to access your weed illegally. It's only right. for you.
Right.
They also limited that method of administration to oils or capsules because there was a no smoking policy in the facility. I agree with this. This provides comfort and equality, or, you know, at least equal access to everyone. While also, we still don't want them smoking it, especially in the older age, because of this increased risk for altered mentation immediately.
And as we learned in the last podcast, that's the least safest method of using it.
Correct. You're learning so much.
I'm trying. I'm trying to keep up with you.
So the skilled nursing facility, in this instance, they developed a policy where residents could buy and store and use the edibles and the oils in their own capacity while still prohibiting their own employees and staff and licensed personnel from either getting cannabis for somebody, meaning I can't get it out of the drawer for you, I can't open your lockbox, so don't give me the passcode, or they couldn't administer the cannabis to the residents. And that seemed to be a very happy medium. This model is very different from other countries. For instance, in Israel, cannabis is on the pharmacy formulary of hospitals and nursing homes. And doctors are very pro-cannabis because they recognize that it helps with many different old age considerations. I attended a international cannabis conference once where we had the pleasure to hear a nurse from Israel who actually worked at one of these nursing homes that was involved in cannabis. And she said that they did a study where they were assessing the risks associated with cannabis. They knew that the risks included safety, like falls and alteration and anxiety and sleep. They knew that nutrition was also a concern because older adults lose their appetite and they don't eat as well as they should, especially when they're in a facility environment. And they also knew that all of their patients, their residents, had polypharmacy issues. They were all on numerous pharmaceuticals. And her discussion was assessing the outcomes related to the pharmaceutical use, the safety use, and were there any benefits associated with providing their residents with micro doses of cannabis every single day. The outcomes were phenomenal. There were no safety signals, meaning that there were no increases in falls, there were no increases of psychotic episodes related to anxiety or depression or schizophrenia. Residents ate better, they were in a better mood, they interacted with more activities, including exercise and going outside and getting that vitamin D and sunlight and fresh air. And they also began to reduce some of their pharmaceutical medications. Thinking about how these types of effects could be implemented in every skilled nursing facility, you can see why older adults are turning to cannabis for quality of life. It's one thing to have a long life. The question that accompanies that is, what is your quality of life in that particular phase? Erickson, which I studied a lot during my doctoral program, has called this our stagnation or our generativity in older adulthood. We either stagnate and we don't continue to grow as a human being because we are regretful. We look back on our life experiences and say, oh, if only I had. And that is more of a negative side of the coin. The glass half full side of the coin is generativity, where we are motivated at older age to give back to the community, to give back to the next generation, to become involved in things that keep us engaged in life, period, right? Nia Medica is the clinic name, a very famous clinic in Israel, And it means it's life, right? It's to life. And when we think of how all of these cannabinoids that are not THC have beneficial effects, that's where we want to make sure that our older adult population is using them appropriately.
What does our friend Tony always say? Stagnation is death.
Never stagnate. Always move forward.
We're on this planet to continue learning and continue making new discoveries and having new experiences. And that's why we're here. We talked a bit about some of the benefits of cannabis for older adults, but there's more. But wait, there's more.
Oh my goodness. We're back to THC. Microdosing is the way to go. Not only for the other cannabinoids, like CBD, CBG, which we've already talked about, those are going to probably be more in a higher proportion to things of the cannabinoids like THC that have a risk. We know that we start at a ratio of cannabinoids. We call this the golden ratio, 1:1. Golden ratios can include any cannabinoid formula. We could do a CBD to THC 1:1. We could do a CBD to CBG 1:1. Take any cannabinoid combination, of which there are, what we're thinking, over 100, 150, combine them in various formulations in a 1:1 ratio, and that's where we begin to develop a medicinal beneficial effect. We can temper those ratios. We can create a different ratio as we promote one effect while lessening the effects that we don't want. A very common ratio in my shop for individuals using CBD and THC is in a 2:1, maybe even a 3:5, 15:20. 20 CBD to 1 of THC is what we would consider the most maximum microdose of THC that we could give for a medicinal purpose. That way, we're giving a very small amount of THC because we know in microdoses, THC has been shown to be very beneficial for the aging brain. This again, the law of unintended consequences. When we genetically cultivated cannabis plants to include higher concentrations of THC, we hid the beneficial effects of THC, because the first effect you feel with high concentrations of THC is stoned. No one wants to feel stoned to a degree that they walk around like this all the time. And remember that over the last 80 years that we've studied cannabis, we have basically looked at smoking marijuana for its high concentrations of THC. We're now flipping that, and we're now beginning to understand that microdoses in the cannabis plant were there because all of the cannabinoids have proportional effects. Hemp is high in CBD. Why is that? Well, hemp is very beneficial for the body. It's very low in THC because we don't expect the THC in hemp to get you high. A couple podcasts ago, we talked about it would take a telephone pole size hemp joint.
A rather large joint.
To get high. So why are those cannabinoids there in proportion? And why is hemp very low in THC? When we begin to tease the science out about how doses matter, we're seeing that low doses of THC appear to be neuroprotective, meaning that low doses of THC in the body will protect nerve function. Surprise! One of the earliest studies on how THC could improve neurofunctioning, neurological conditions in the brain, was done by Marchalant. And he and his group published two studies in 2008 and 2009 in which they looked at how THC from cannabis affects the brain. They were looking particularly at an area known as the hippocampus. The hippocampus is part of the central area of our brain known as the limbic system. And the hippocampus is involved in short-term memory and taking those short-term memories and converting them into a long-term memory. It's also very important in the spatial memory. And the hippocampus is very affected by aging. All areas of the brain are very affected by aging. The brain cells shrink as we lose brain cells, or the brain cells become affected by disease processes. We know that in Alzheimer's disease, the hippocampus region is especially affected by these changes. And Alzheimer's disease patients suffer damage and disorientation in the hippocampus. The hippocampus is also related to spatial memory. Spatial memory is how you remember where to sit down, where the chair is behind you, where the couch is behind you, how to step off of a curb or how to step off of a stair. So in Alzheimer's disease patients, all of these issues are related to the hippocampal changes of their, they lose their memory, they lose the ability to maybe walk, and they lose the motor functions associated with all of those changes. Marchalant, in these two studies in 2008 and 2009, found that cannabis use improves spatial memory, it decreased age-related inflammation, it increased hippocampal neurogenesis. Neurogenesis is the regrowing of brain cells. It's why the United States government owns the patent on cannabis as a neuroprotectant. These changes in the brain are profound for those individuals who could benefit most from protection of brain cells. That's the older population who is at the highest risk for these neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and dementia. In 2022, Watson's group, another research study, found that low doses of THC appeared to be neuroprotective, and they also reversed age-related cognitive decline. Now we're talking different areas of the brain. In this study, THC administered to aged mice increased the hippocampal spine density. This is the thick part of the neuron. It's where you need a very dense structure to help move those millions, billions of synapses, those millions of nerve endings, those nerve stimulations down to the end of the nerve cell. And from that, as the hippocampal spine density increased, the synaptic connectivity, so now there was more, let's say, juice behind that nerve cell to jump to the next neuron, that enhanced the cognitive performance of these aged mice. So this was a very surprising finding that has been mimicked in study after study, that if you give microdoses of THC, not only does it protect the brain and all of the effects that are associated with old age, it also regenerates nerve cells to create more beneficial effects in even thinking and making decisions associated with brain function.
So now, with all that said, what can we do to help our older population and their use of cannabis?
I'll say it over and over, and I'm going to hit everybody on the head with it until it happens. We need to educate our healthcare providers, period.
Yes.
They did a study in Colorado, and they asked older adults who had registered at medical marijuana dispensaries across the state. They said, let's sit down and have a talk. What do you think about using cannabis? We're not so much concerned about what's happening in your bodies related to that. We want to look at how you're dealing with cannabis use, because you're really kind of out there flying this on your own. In cannabis industry, we're kind of building the airplane as we're flying it, as we like to say, because we really have only negative research, negative meaning that this research over the 80 years that looked at it as a drug of abuse, to go on. So we do know the dangers. That's the great thing about it, is that we do know the risks associated with it. But the cannabis use that we're now seeing in older adults are not the same cannabis uses that we saw in the 1960s and 70s.
Right.
It's a lot different. And so therefore, we're flying blindly in some of these areas. And who do our older populations turn to for that? They turn to their healthcare providers. In this Colorado group, the main theme that stood out was that they needed to be educated about the use of cannabis. They needed to be educated about the medical marijuana programs and what the significances were and what the processes of obtaining a medical marijuana card were. They needed to be educated about hemp. They were confused. This is not surprising. I get these questions in my shop all the time. What's the difference between marijuana? Isn't marijuana hemp? They're the same plant, aren't they? They need a lot of education just about the differences and the access. They have both positive and negative outcomes that they need to be aware about. They wish somebody had sat down with them and talked with them about the drug-drug interactions. They found that out on their own. That's not very safe, is it? They wanted to know about the different administration methods and how individual doses were obtained. So the education for them is going to be coming from the healthcare providers. And not many healthcare providers are working in a medical marijuana dispensary. And not many healthcare providers are well-educated and nuanced enough to be able to have these types of discussions with their patients. They want their healthcare providers to be educated because many of them in this Colorado group reported on the fact that when they tried to discuss this with their physician, the physician refused to discuss it with them. And they were, or on the other side of the coin, they were also very hesitant to discuss their use of cannabis with their physician because they were worried about the stigma associated with it. They're afraid to talk to their family members about it. They're afraid to talk to their friends about it because of the stigma and the stereotype. Many of our population still has a negative attitude about using cannabis, thinking that it's just a bunch of stoners wanting to get high. Where the research is now showing that, yeah, there you can get high, but wow, there are so many other beneficial effects if you don't get high. And the older adults are the most likely to benefit from that type of education. We know that good physician-patient communication influences health outcomes. So if you're not disclosing your cannabis use to your healthcare provider, we're now in that situation that is very unsafe because in several studies, our older population is getting their cannabis education through word of mouth, their friends, their relatives, their neighbors, the social media, that's not good, or they're getting it from dispensary staff. And I will have to say that I do have a bone to pick with dispensary staff who are not medical professionals. What are they there to do? They're there to sell you cannabis. And that cannabis can come in many varieties, meaning there's different strains that have different compositions of cannabinoids, different concentrations, especially of THC. There's many different types of administration from smoking the flower, vaping, edibles, oils, etc. So our healthcare providers are not being utilized in the medical marijuana dispensaries. We are seeing a huge disconnect in the older adult population wanting to go to the dispensary and asking medical questions. How is this going to interact with my medications? When should I take this to get the best effect? What should I take? How much should I take? A bud tender's role is really to listen, but because they don't have that depth of knowledge regarding medical marijuana use, all they can advise is on what they know about the plant. What they know about the bud. And here, I think this will work for you. We got a lot of this in the back. Go home and try this and start at this level. So at least they will tell them to start at the very lowest level, I'm hoping. But all the rest is up for grabs because they're not doing a drug reconciliation. This is a standard process in any healthcare. You go to the healthcare organization, you go to the hospital, a clinic, a doc in the box on the corner, your physician's office. One of the first things they ask you to do is write down all the drugs that you are taking, including over-the-counter drugs. We look at that in the healthcare profession, and we want to look for drug-drug interactions amongst those drugs, as well as to see if there's anything that actually stands out in relation to blood pressure or any of the other conditions that you're taking it for. This is where the dispensary staff are lacking in their education. They're doing a great job at providing good bud. Bud tenders do a great job at that, but they don't approach it from the depth of knowledge that is needed to counsel and educate our older populations to keep them safe. And that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. Another thing we need to do is all healthcare providers should be screening all patients for cannabis use, and that includes our adolescents. Children are not so much worried about, but adolescents are now, we've talked about cannabis and adolescents in previous podcasts. Adolescents have access. It's not the access we desire. And actually putting dispensary models in place have shown that we cut that access off because we card you when you come into the dispensary to buy. But we should be having these conversations even at the school level and screen every patient encounter. So if you're a school nurse, you should be asking your high schoolers and even your middle schoolers about cannabis use, but especially in our older population. We need to do this for many reasons, obviously to screen for the polypharmacy issues and potential drug-drug interactions, but just talking to a patient and having that open discussion allows them to realize that they're not going to be stigmatized if they bring it up. And they are very curious. The older adult population is very curious about cannabis. It's just very difficult for them to find someone who will talk to them about cannabis use, let alone who understands all that is needed to be educated and discussed about how older populations will be using cannabis. Finally, all healthcare providers and everyone needs to understand the federal and state laws. Federal, we're still up in the air as we wait for it to be potentially removed from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 on the Controlled Substance Act. But every state that has cannabis laws and regulations implemented will have different sets of laws. Back to the schizophrenic United States of cannabis, because every state either, for instance, has qualifying conditions. In North Carolina, there are not very many qualifications for your doctor to approve you to use medical marijuana, whereas here in Virginia, where we're doing our recording, we lobbied for let doctors decide. So everyone in Virginia, if the doctor believes that medical cannabis can improve your condition and quality of life, you're allowed to be assigned a medical recommendation for marijuana. So know your laws, identify and collaborate with those practitioners who are already on board the cannabis train. I have been getting more and more referrals because the fact that more physicians and healthcare providers of all different disciplines, think massage therapy, think physical therapy, think psychotherapy, such as your counselors, psychologists, psychoanalysts, these individuals are beginning to realize that cannabis can either be a very supportive way to treat a condition or can be used to replace harmful things like opioids or long-term uses of sleep aids. We need to begin collaborating together to come up with plans and programs that will both educate ourselves amongst the population as well as rolling out education to our healthcare providers through their curriculum. Medical schools, nursing schools, physical therapy schools. And then finally, the number one thing is to roll out education to our public. Let them know if you're an older adult, more than likely, cannabis can benefit you, but we need to have a talk. There are risks associated with it, and we really need to discuss these before you embark on that trip down cannabis lane. So let's have that discussion before we even begin to administer cannabis to you that could provide, we were looking for beneficial effects. We certainly don't want you to have any harmful or risky effects.
You should follow us on social media. We're on X. Just search for Canna Podcast. New episodes every Wednesday for your listening pleasure. Wherever you get your podcasts, search for Cannabis Nurse Truths on Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, iHeartRadio, you name it. Or head to the website, cannabisnursetruths.com. I'm Lee Foster. She's Dr. Denise Foster. Thanks for listening.